Yak, 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 yak Hey, Jack, what's going on?
What's up, Tom?
Me, but not really willingly.
First time morning show.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. And you had to pick the night of daylight savings. So not only did I sleep for... I would have slept for 5 hours, but now it's four. Thanks to... I guess the wives' tale is it goes back to Benjamin Franklin. I don't think that's actually true, but...
Yeah, it was to save electricity or some.
Whole thing is basically to it was like to save candles in the 1700s and then to save electricity in the, I think, the 1970s. And I don't know why the hell we're doing it now. I mean, we need to stop. Arizona doesn't do it. My grandmother lives there. I know they don't do it there. So that's one reason to move to Arizona.
In Sedona, Arizona, boys and girls.
Sedona, Arizona. It's a beautiful place. Believe it or not, Madonna.
I still think you're making it up. Madonna. It rhymes. It can't be a place.
No, Madonna has a house there too. It's Madonna's Sedona, Arizona. I don't have anything that rhymes with that would mean house. So
neither does anybody else. Pagoda.
There, that would have worked.
Sedona, Arizona, and a pagoda.
Well, we're not here to talk about daylight savings time, though. We do have a guest with us today, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Why don't you introduce our guest?
Our guest today is a man that I worked with when I lived in Richmond in the theater community, the vibrant theater community up there, and somebody that I respect. I've worked with him as an actor a couple times. He was a director in a show that I did, and a lot of people that listen to the show probably already know him, but if you don't know him, you'll learn a lot about him and a lot of interesting stuff. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I introduce Mr. Bill Brock.
Jack, did you say something? I'm not in my body yet.
Too early for you too. Hey, you wanted this time, man.
I know. What was I thinking? I think it was just the craziness of daylight savings. It just, you know, the hype. It got the better of me.
Yes, sir.
Early to bed, early to rise.
Makes
for an interesting podcasting time.
I agree.
So, Bill, normally what we do on this show is we have something that we're yakking off to at the week, haha, pun intended, and it could be anything from pop culture, TV, movies, music, just anything stupid that you're excited about. So why don't you start and tell us what you're excited about?
Anything stupid? Oh, my gosh. I wrote a play, which you were in, but I wrote a script, a movie script called Party of 50. I'm directing it. I'm acting in it. I'm co-producing it. And it's about a guy who's on the cusp of turning the big 5-0.
Good stuff.
Does that mean you're turning the big 5-0?
Yes.
So this is a subject matter close to the heart, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It happened already December 7th, and back in the fall, I decided, well, geez, what do I want to do? I'm an actor. I'm a writer. I know friends older than I that had celebrated 50, and they just kind of, you know, ranted about it and, you know, were not too happy about the big 5-0. So I decided, well, let me do something with this. I could easily go out with some friends and to a bar and have a few drinks and celebrate, but I wanted to turn it into kind of a milestone where it's a combination of art colliding with life. It was a very, very unique idea, so I decided to just tackle it.
That's cool. So what's the actual movie play about, other than like being, you know, other than turning 50? Obviously, that would be a little bit boring if it was just, okay, it's your 50th birthday, the end. So I'm sure there's some other stuff going on there. What do you got?
Well, it's a comedy drama. It's a guy turning 50. All the signs are there. He pays close attention to characters around him, and it's just mortality. It's just the fact that, tick tock, tick tock. I'm definitely running out of time here, and I'm not too happy about it. And I don't know if most men feel that way, but it was just an interesting character study on my end. I'm proud of being 50. So whatever you see in the film is definitely just acting. Perhaps I get that from my father, who's 81 years old and healthy and walks 4 miles a day. So he's a wonderful model for me as I get older. But that's it. There's lots of comedic moments in it. You're introduced to different characters who are connected with the party that they will be attending. And it was fun to actually plan a party, an actual party, and then just employ professional actors to work the scenes during the party.
Yeah, every time I have a party, I hire professional actors because I don't have...
because you have no friends.
Yeah, I don't have friends. But, it usually makes for a pretty good party. But, yeah, I feel what you're saying about the whole mortality and getting older thing, and I'm only 30, so I don't know what 50 is going to feel like.
Ouch!
Jack, you're almost 50, right?
Not quite, sir. I'm getting there.
Close
getting
enough.
There. Is my levels okay?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, good. So, Bill, how'd you get started in the whole acting biz, show biz?
Gosh, you sound like one of my 10th grade students. But that's not a slight.
Well, we are a show called Yakin' Off, so we have the humor of 10th
you're
grade.
You're a high school teacher?
I am.
What do you teach in high school?
I'm sorry?
What do you teach? What subject?
I teach English, 10th grade.
Okay. So if I speak incorrectly, are you going to correct me?
No, not at all. Just the kids.
Okay.
Where were we going with this question? How did I get started? I got started in college, I think, back in 1983, for all you 30-year-olds out there.
I was one.
And I was in...
Go ahead.
I was seven, if it makes you feel any better.
It makes me feel great, guys. Jeez, I'm talking to you guys. I'm already working on the sequel to this film. I was in a play called Hot L Baltimore at Holyoke Community College, and I had 5 lines, and I was running down the stairs shirtless on stage, and I was scared to death. And that was kind of my debut to acting, stage acting.
Were you scared to death because it was your first time acting or because you were shirtless?
I've
never seen you. I don't know what you look like, so.
Well, I was pretty chiseled back in college, so no, it wasn't the physical aspect.
Don't let him fool you. He's in good shape for 50, too.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Hell,
Jack.
For me, he's in good shape for 36.
I think Jack's got a crush.
I really do. I always have.
Jack, we'll save you for the bromance for party of 60.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll take that element and see what we can do with it. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started, and I never realized I'd still be acting. I just thought it was kind of a thing to do to meet chicks.
Yeah. Did you have any desire when you were a kid? Did you have any desire growing up, like when you were 10 years old? Did you have a dream of being an actor or?
Yeah, I would. I don't know. I would do those goofy things in front of parents. You know what I mean? I mean, I can't list specifics, but there were just, I don't know, just silly things like with a fake guitar or something like that. And I don't know if I was doing Elvis or Ed Sullivan. I don't know.
So you were always trying to entertain, basically.
Yeah, well, I was the middle child, and so I was the Jan Brady of the group, and they're always searching for identity. So I think that's kind of, and which is kind of interesting, because in this movie, this guy is trying to search for some kind of identity. Trying to figure things out in terms of numbers.
So were you the class clown when you were doing these things, or the family clown? Because I know you more as a serious type of an actor. I know you do some comedy on the side, but were you set out to do the comedic stuff?
My buddies were class clowns. I was like the mini me of class clowns because I would always laugh. I mean, my friends that would do things, practice in class, they could keep the straight face. They could do the humor and which would drive the teachers absolutely crazy. But I was the one constantly getting in trouble because I was the laughing audience. You know, it was almost that scene from one of the Woody Allen movie. What did I do? What did I do? And he has to come down to the front of the class Yeah, that was basically me.
So you were the peanut gallery.
Yeah, I was the peanut gallery. Yep.
That's what I am on this show, too. Tom does all the talking. I just chime in from time to time.
Yeah, I know. He leaves the burden on me.
You love it.
I have to be the talent.
Why are mommy and daddy fighting?
It's what we do.
Yeah, it's pretty much what we do.
So other than traditional plays, have you done any type of TV work where people may have seen you?
Yes. What was it? A couple months ago, I had the male lead in a TV show called A Haunting on the Discovery Channel. Was it Discovery or ID? Discovery, Investigation Discovery, one of those. But yeah, I was the father. The house was haunted, had two daughters, and they were freaking out, and wife was freaking out. The great Irene Ziegler, by the way, was my wife, and it was wonderful to work with her. I've done that. I've done episodes of FBI Criminal Pursuit, Wicked Attractions, usually in the capacity of detectives or government officials. Or last year I was I played a bank robber with a bomb connected to his neck. Yeah, that was fun.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So you mentioned a female that you had acted with before, which kind of it always raises the question to me. Yeah, have you ever had any on set romances or anything crazy happen on set that would be that you can tell us without getting in too much trouble?
On set romance, no. You're crushing. Most actresses I know are crazy.
You're crushing
my
dreams.
Catch flack for that, but not a good thing. A good thing for acting couples to, yeah.
So getting into acting to get laid is not a good idea, is what you're telling me?
It's kind of counterproductive since you said earlier you did it for the girls.
Apparently it didn't work.
But I was a young kid back then. I didn't know any better. I once did a play, the name actress shall remain unnamed, but I did a play where she was my love interest, and we did not. We did not like each other. We did not get along. And so, there was the silent treatment backstage. Not one word uttered to the other. Yet the magic of stage, when you're on stage, hey, we embrace, we kiss, I love you. And in my mind, you're not supposed to kind of break character, but I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? So yeah. That's happened on a couple of occasions with one actress and one actor, but I didn't have to make out with the actor.
You didn't have to, so, but maybe you did.
Didn't have to. Well, didn't want to, but didn't have to.
Well, that's good.
But that's an odd story regarding stage. It happens.
Well, I guess that's why it's acting. Everyone thinks you're just up there playing, but acting is it's a hard thing to do. I've never actually tried to do it, so other than I had one acting class that I took. So, but what do you recommend for people to do? That love TV, that love movies, that are like, hey, I want to start doing this. I'd like to pursue this. I mean, what kind of advice do you have for actors that want to get involved and learn the craft?
Just, be persistent. It's a grind. Do your homework. Arrive on time. Know your lines. Take direction well. Listen. And whatever works, just keep it in your bag of tricks. I mean, there's things but it comes with experience. It comes with just staying with what works, knowing your type, knowing what you're good for. I was at a cast party last night following a play some friends were in, and I had the question came up from several people. So what are you doing now? And I'm like, well, nothing. There's no stage work. I hadn't been on a stage in a year. Why not? And I was like, I like to take breaks. There's a whole world out there. I'm not one of these actors that has to. It's almost like a form of therapy. Has to go from stage to stage to stage. I like my downtime. I like my breaks. And if something catches my eye, I might audition. I might not. I had a student come in last year. He came into school after school. He stopped in and said, hey, Mr. Brock, I want to be an actor. I'm like, okay. The big why. Why do you want to be an actor? Because I want to be famous. And I said, forget it. That's the wrong motivation for becoming an actor. And I think, in this Mick, how can I phrase this? This Mick reality universe that we see plastered all over television today, that's the mentality. You know, don't do the bulwark. Don't work your craft and your talent. Just get your face on TV. So I think I don't know. I think acting has kind of been watered down for television anyway.
So I can't get laid and I can't get famous, is what you're saying.
You can if you want. It just takes a lot of work. Takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of money. It takes a look. It takes talent.
I'm screwed.
Hey, I'd rather be rich than famous.
True. I agree there.
Yeah, I'd rather be rich than famous.
But I don't have any looks or talent, so I think I'll stick to drumming or podcasting. There's a reason I've always wanted to do radio.
That's a common misconception with the entertainment business anyway, because you only see the people, the idiots like you were talking about, that are famous for being famous on reality shows or the Tom Cruises of the world or whatever. Very rare. Like I do work full time in the entertainment business and I make peanuts. So mm-hmm. You really have to have a passion for what you're doing and want to do it just like any other job. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you flip burgers like you're the best burger flipper ever, you know, so you have to have that. If you're getting into entertainment, like Bill was saying, to be famous, to make money, even to get the girls, then you're really going in it in the wrong sense. You really need to be passionate and have the drive to want to put on a good production for the audience or a good movie out or whatever it is that you're doing in the entertainment field.
Yes. Yeah. And where's your state of mind? I mean, is it a healthy state? No. You want to make it in Hollywood, you can make it, but at what cost? You know, how many bridges are you going to burn? What's it going to take physically, mentally? And then once you arrive, you have to stay there. You know, you have to maintain that caliber of celebrity, whatever that
right.
is. And being a celebrity can be very expensive. It costs a lot of money, you know, for security and this and that and the other. So I don't know.
Sure.
And then there's the fame aspect. I years ago, I was walking down Rodeo Drive with my wife at the time, Satan, and we walked by one of the jewelry stores, and there was this big Humvee outside, and so we're walking by, and there's paparazzi there, and I asked one of the photographers, "What's going on?" "Oh, Schwarzenegger's in there. He's buying a diamond for his wife." And We just kept walking. It didn't faze me in the least. I don't know. It's interesting how people perceive fame and the drive for it. I think there's such a drive today, and I don't know where it comes from. Perhaps it's the element of reality television where everybody can do it, and that's not a healthy thing.
It's certainly a different world now when it comes to television with reality TV. Were you just out in L.A. visiting, or did you actually ever live out there and try to pursue that?
No, we went out there for about a week, just to visit. And you're right, it's La La Land, it's Oz.
The whole place is pretend out there. Everyone you meet, everyone just acts nice. And I know from being from the East Coast, it's like being from New Jersey, that ain't nobody that nice, you know?
Yes.
At least in New Jersey, people will tell you to your face that they're pissed off. You know, people out in LA are scared.
But there's respect for that. You know, there's a respect for,
I think so,
telling people what you need to hear, as opposed to, living in this flowery, wonderful, fake world.
No, it's true, for sure. You know, and I think I don't like either extreme. You know, I'm not a New York City guy. I stayed out there, you know, a decent amount of time, and I spent like a month and a half in Los Angeles before. And it's not that I'll never go back to either place, but I don't think I could ever live in either place. I'm more of a, even though I'm born in Jersey, I'm more of a Southern type of guy. I like to take it nice and slow and easy, and you know, I just like that when everyone's nice and polite, and it's just a good time.
Sure.
Yeah, that works sometimes. Down here in the Orlando area, it's kind of a weird mix of the FU attitude and the layback Southern attitude, because there's so many transients and so many tourists. So sometimes you get it and sometimes you don't. It's kind of a equal mix for me, and I dig it.
Well, you said transients, and I immediately thought Jack Lambert.
Yeah. No one's from Florida, Bill. I've met no one from Florida down here. Everybody's just here. They've all migrated.
What about Mickey Mouse? Mickey Mouse has been down there for decades.
Mickey's originally from
he's
L.A.
He's from California.
Oh, that's right.
So even he's a transplant.
You know, I've often wondered how many bottles of Just for Men does it take to keep that black mange, that raven gloss that he uses. My God.
So another thing that that I know about Bill, and I hope he doesn't mind me bringing it up, because I guess it's kind of personal.
This interview's over.
It's over. All right. Thanks for joining us. Bill, we talk about pop culture a ton on this show, and I know that Bill is a pop culture junkie, a film junkie especially, so much so that he has a nice personal collection of some authentic movie props.
I do.
Would you like to tell us what you have and how you may have acquired those?
This is way too personal. This interview is over.
Okay.
It's funny you should mention that, because I'm in my room here with things that are just adorning the walls. Some people will be like, wow, that's pretty cool. Other people will be like, dude, there's a whole life out there. Just get out and live it. Let me see. I am staring at I don't know if you guys would know this stuff, but there was a movie called Dante's Peak with Pierce Brosnan. I don't know if you remember that movie about the stupid volcano.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm staring at the eyeglasses he wore in the first half of the film.
That's really cool.
Yeah, the actual eyeglasses. I think he played a professor or something. I can't remember, but he needs them for the first half of the film, but then when the destruction takes over, he has perfect 20/20 vision, lost the glasses, and can drive without the glasses.
Oh, of course.
I'm a Brosnan fan, so I have those. If I look to my left, I'm a big fan of the Bourne Supremacy movie. I have the bloody Russian maps that Bourne uses during the taxi cab scene, which to me is the greatest chase scene in film history. The Russian vodka bottle. And I also am the proud owner of the harness jacket, the stunt jacket that he wore, the long dark jacket that they prepped for the two stunts he did in the movie where he has to jump. I have that. I did some research. They had 15 long coats and then one stunt jacket. So it's really cool to have the only stunt jacket, which is depicted on the DVD, of course. I have the sweater he wore in the taxi cab scene with blood and fake snow attached to the cuffs.
Nice.
Titanic. I have a life vest from Titanic. Only 150 were made for the production. What else? There's other stuff. But that's pretty much. I also have I'm a huge James Dean fan, and I bought a wallet from Casper Van Dien years ago when he portrayed James Dean in a movie called Live Fast, Die Young, and it's the actual wallet that Mr. Dean uses when he pulls over. He's stopped by a state trooper, and he's written up, and he pulls out the jacket to give the state trooper his ID. So, yeah, so I kind of have all this stuff framed in the house, and you walk around, you know. Whenever you have parties, they make great conversation pieces.
And where do you buy, how'd you get them?
Where do you buy that stuff?
Buy them all on eBay?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff was on eBay, and it came from Premier Props. A lot of this stuff you just have to act fast. And I bought this stuff years ago. It's really hard to acquire this stuff now. You know, I have something from the Bourne. I have a framed George Bush picture from the Bourne Identity. And then I acquired all this stuff from the second film, Supremacy. And then by the third movie, because the franchise was such a hit, you would go online. There was nothing. There was absolutely no props for the third film. So, it was just kind of a phase I went through. Don't really pay much attention to it now. And I don't know, I have to leave this stuff in my will. So be good, boys.
you may be the proud owner of a Titanic life jacket.
That's right.
So you like props and stuff like that? Or have you ever gotten into autographs and that kind of thing, like meeting people and needing a signature of something?
If I look over my shoulder, there's a framed autograph of Christopher Reeve. I met him years ago. I'm from Springfield, Massachusetts, and he would come to the Berkshires Williamstown, the Williamstown Film Festival. He had done it ever since 1968. He was an apprentice at the time, and he always kind of gave back. And whatever movie he was doing or what have you, he always scheduled a summer at Williamstown. I had seen him four times on stage, so I had the pleasure of meeting him because he was one of my favorites. And he signed, he was walking into a deli, and I was walking out with a couple of friends, and we were going to see him in a performance that afternoon. And I asked him for an autograph, and he was like, sure. And I had a pen, but I didn't have paper. But I remember I bought a lottery ticket that morning, and so he signed the lottery ticket, and he said he hoped I'd win. And just a great guy. Wonderful, wonderful guy.
That would have been a catch-22 if you would have won the lottery, because I don't think – I guess they let you keep the ticket. I've never won the lottery, so I'm not sure if you get to keep the ticket or not.
Yeah, I don't.
I guess it would be good to keep it if you won like millions of dollars. I would frame my lottery ticket if I won.
Sure, but then Mr. Reed would probably take me to a court and get half the money.
Yeah,
some weird loophole law. But yeah, that was a thrill, and I still have it. And gosh, that was back in the '80s.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole autograph thing. Back in the '80s, I probably get it a little bit more because cameras weren't as prevalent as they are today.
Yes.
But, yeah, I went to a wrestling event the other night. It was the last night that they taped at Universal Studios. And as a thank you, all the wrestlers came out. And people were just mobbing them for autographs. And, you know, I asked a few very respectfully, hey, can I have a photo? Because that's what I'd have to remember it. But an autograph, I guess a lot of people do it because they sell them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just can't believe they're worth anything.
Well, but, you know, plus, I mean, you can discount the opportunity of meeting someone. You can just go online and buy one.
Right.
I mean, if you want it, if you're such a fan, there's no need to, you know, stalk people for autographs or camp out. Just go to eBay. You know, they're pretty authentic for the most part.
So I was at this thing called Monster Mania in Cherry Hill, New Jersey yesterday, which is like a horror con. And they had the cast of Walking Dead there. And Billy Dee Williams was there, and Peter Mayhew. So there was some Star Wars. There was like nobody waiting in line for Star Wars people, though. I don't know if it was just later in the day and they had already gotten their signatures. I guess it's more of a horror crowd. But there's people lined up paying $30 to get an autograph of Carl from The Walking Dead. Who's what?
That's crazy.
Like
that's
10,
crazy.
10 years old or something like that? Like,
yeah, he's...
What? Oh, he's a kid?
Yeah,
yeah.
He's a young kid. Like, why would you sit there and spend money and meet this guy? I mean, it was bad enough. My friend got her Billy Dee Williams Vinylmation signed from Billy Dee Williams. I guess I should call it the Lando Calrissian. The Lando Vinylmation. But he looked like he didn't even want to be there. Like, he looked miserable, which I guess I would too. I mean, if that's – I wanted to meet – the only thing I was going to say to Carl is – you realize this is probably going to be the only role you're ever going to have, so I hope you enjoy these conventions. Like, that's
stay in the car, Carl.
That's basically what I was going to
that's
say.
That's what I would have told him.
I need more time because I was a fan of Walking Dead, and I haven't watched it at all. The last two seasons, I just haven't, and I'm like, gosh, I'm not even TiVoing it, so I don't even know what's going on.
Oh, you are missing out. We've talked about it on the show, like, three episodes now. It's that good that we just can't get past talking about it.
Which
one of the things
into?
I was going
to
say about the autographs, though, who got the Lando Vinylmation signed, Tom?
Janet.
Yeah, figures.
Right.
one of the things about that too is I was going to bring up that if you have collectibles like Bill's props or an action figure or whatever, as soon as someone scrawls their name across it, that drops the value in that type of thing. So if you're going to want to get an autograph, usually like the 8x10 glossies or something like that are the best way to go. I would never give somebody something that I have and be like, here, sign this, because it just it lessens the value unless you go after an autograph hunter who's going to pay because now you've got an action figure signed by Lando Calrissian.
So Jack, what you're telling me is I should not have taken my black Sharpie and scrawled I love Jack and Rose on my Titanic vest.
Probably not the best idea, but so yeah. Last thing you brought it up, we'll cover here is you said you loved James Dean, and one of the ways I had met you before, obviously, that's why you called me to be put in this role, is you actually did a show called James Dean Crossing the Finish Line, and you did it. What it was is it was called a six block series, and essentially yes. We had a black box theater and no props, minimal lighting, and you pulled it off. So I'm curious, for my own benefit, are you thinking about maybe doing that as a full on production or filming pieces of it?
Yeah, I have to get in touch with a friend of mine, actress friend of mine, who's also in Party of 50, Amy Berlin, because she's had plays published, and I have to take that route. I have to. You know, we did this back in 2010, and of course, Jack, you were a wonderful Rolf Wutherick, James Dean's mechanic. You were, oh God, you were so good. You were so great in that. I just want to tell you, you're very welcome. And I never tired of watching your performance. It was great.
I'm going to need to see the tape.
Yeah, it's something that's simmering on the back burner. I've done some research, and there's been a few productions that, let me think. There was one, believe it or not, in 1977 over in Britain, there was a musical called Dean, which flopped miserably.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. And there was also, I believe, something in Colorado called, I think it was James Dean, a rehearsal or something like that, which didn't really go anywhere. It's one thing I just have to jump onto and pursue it, because I think we have a good script here. The play takes place basically the last day of his life. When my writing style is to write the ending first and then just kind of go back in time and create the beginning and middle and all that stuff. And boy, did I luck out. I lucked out with Travis Robeson, who played James Dean, because my original Dean actor had bowed out 3 weeks before, and I was scrambling to find somebody. So Travis, my hat's off to him. He saved my ass. He really did, and he was great. And he was 21 years old, and he looked like Dean. And I worked with him a little bit, and he did a great job. But so we'll see once the film's over, I should start addressing that again and start asking some questions on how I can maybe get it published and do a full on. You know, have to talk to some people about that.
Yeah, is that echoing? Yeah, it's me. Was there anything that you saw when it was performed on stage by us that maybe you thought, oh, that works better than I thought, or oh, that didn't work quite so well as I had written, and would you make any changes if it were to go to a publishing house?
Oh, well, in my mind, without giving too much away, the scene with the high school girl who has the crush on Dean. Originally, it was a couple. It was a couple, and they. Well, I hate to be the spoiler, but they took their own lives, and I decided, well, does that work, or is it better with just the girl crush? What which avenue should I take here? And so I decided to keep it with that whole Bobby Soxer kind of just the lone young. Romantic, you know, starry-eyed female who's obviously troubled. It's been almost 3 years.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is I was part of the production, so I thought it was great. But I know when I was directing shows at Richard Bland College, not even being the writer, the producer, and the director like you were on the James Dean show, I'd watch it throughout the run and be like, man. Why was I thinking that when we were going through the rehearsal process? Or maybe I should have done this a little bit different. So I was just curious, because in entertainment, you are your own worst critic all the time. I mean, like I said, I do it every day, and I walk down to one of our shows in the park, and I'm like, man, that was terrible. But I have 800 guests sitting in the stadium that thought it was awesome. So, you know, we are our hardest critics.
Well, I think with experience, thank God I'm not one of these crazy actors that I don't beat myself up. I figure whatever happens, it's done, it's history, move on.
Right.
You know, with every audition, I'll audition and come through the door at the end and get into my car and say, okay, it's forgotten, it's done. What's next? I never think about it. And I think that's the best advice to, because I've run into actors where, gosh, it's not life or limb here, folks. Come on, it's just acting.
Right.
So, but I one thing I couldn't get Travis to do, and yeah, this it's coming back to me now. But where he takes the red jacket off and he's facing the imaginary ball in front of him that's about to charge. And I constantly wanted him. I gave him the direction to look at that back wall. Don't look at the front row of the audience. I want you to see this ball in the distance. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. He just kind of looked down. And I think, you know, if I could go back in time, I would change that. I would wish that he could just envision that ball, I don't know, 400 yards away or whatever the case may be, but to concentrate on that back wall. That's one thing I wish I could change. But hey, you know, you can't have everything. And like I said, once you're done, it's history, forget it.
Right. That's actually the way that I feel about it when I'm performing, because I hate being a part of a cast who's like, oh, this was the best show ever, and we're going to stay in touch forever, and just all this mess. I'm like, whatever, it's a job. If I make a friend with you, like I have with you, Bill, great. If not, you know, I'm there to do a job. I'm there to do something, get paid, not make lifelong acquaintances. And if we work together again, you know, I hope that comes across as professionalism and not being an ass, but, you know. That's the way I feel about it too.
Oh, I know. I know. It's a weird business. It's
It's
real
very
estate.
weird.
And it, but it's it, you know, Frank Vaughn, who's also the editor and the co-producer of Party of 50. He was in the play. You know, he played Dennis Stock, the photographer Dennis Stock, and he did a great job. And I mean, I had a dream cast. I had some great people, and so I'm working with Frank once again in this capacity of as editor for my film. And he's a great editor. He's terrific. He's put together two trailers for us, and we're coming to the end of the line now. We have a couple of more scenes to shoot. It's in the can. Then we just start, you know, peddling it.
So where do you think people are going to be able to see that movie once it's finished? What are you hoping? What are your goals as far as film festivals and?
Well, I mean, yeah, we're looking at film festivals. I mean, this whole thing started back in the fall of 12, and I had mentioned that I came up with the idea, and Frank and I were at this restaurant, one of our haunts called Poe's Pub, Edgar Allan Poe, Poe's Pub,
Oh, that's
and
bright
we're
and
sharing a
cheery.
couple of beers, and I said, you know, I'm turning 50. I've got this idea for this short film, and he said, I like it. Write it, and we'll see what we can do with it. And that's kind of what happened. I think I started with maybe 15 pages, which wasn't much, but then I continued to add some things and add some things, and that's kind of how the whole thing started. You know, it was just this idea, and it was this. I'm living this part of my life where I'm staring 50 in the eye and saying, "Okay, here we go. What can we do with it?" Film festivals, yes, we'll submit it to film festivals. There's the great Bird Theater, the classic historic Bird Theater in downtown Richmond. We're talking to the manager there, maybe have a screening there, maybe on a Sunday at 2 or 4 p.m. or something. You know, I don't know what the day rate is for the Bird. And then, of course, I've got a, you know, 70-inch screen TV here, so I'll have the cast over for like a little mini preview. And we'll see where it goes. All of the principal actors in it, they cannot wait to see it. They know they've done great stuff. I know. I've seen all the dailies. They've done great stuff. And so there's this anticipation and some powerful forces behind. There's just this feeling that we've got something here. We need to bottle it and get it out there, because the actors themselves, I feel really, really confident, and they cannot wait to see it. And that's just always great to hear.
Yeah, sure. It sounds cool. I mean, I'm definitely interested to check it out. How long is it gonna? So, what's the runtime on this thing? And how short of a film are we talking?
Well, I think we started at about 45, and now we're probably up to about an hour.
Okay, so
You
it's
know?
pretty long, man.
And yeah, so I don't know if it'll be a short or a feature. We don't know what we're going to end up with.
Yeah.
You know, and Frank, my editor, had called and said, "Look, we got a problem." And I'm like, "Well, what's the problem?" It's like, "Well, we shot the ending, which is pretty much dramatic, but is bittersweet, and it has a positive, uplifting ending, but it does get pretty dramatic at the end." The problem with this film is it's too funny. And I'm like, really? He's like, yes, it's too funny. We need a dramatic jolt about halfway through. And I was like, all right, yeah, you know, you're the architect of this thing, and you're putting it together. If you feel we need a dramatic jolt, then so be it. I'll come up with something. Give me a day or two. I'll write a scene. And sure enough, I was able to come up with an idea of. Without giving anything away, but I employed this older actor here in Richmond, who he's terrific. I admire his work, stage work, greatly. Named Larry Gard, and he is, oh, how can I describe him? He would be me at 70, and I think he was. I just happened upon him while driving by an alley one day. And he's this homeless man, and he used to be someone. He was this corporate figure. He was a name. Everyone knew him. He had a corner office. I mean, there's one line in the script where he approaches my car and he says, "Oh, I was somebody. I had a corporate office, a corner office, and I had a desk bigger than this car." That was the dramatic jolt. Something happens, and that's where I once again mortality comes into play. So we were able to deal with that, and yeah, it happens at the halfway point. And while I'm en route home to this surprise party, there's a party that's going to take place, and I'm not aware of it. But it has a lot of comic elements, and that peppered with drama, and has a strong message at the end.
So wait, hold on a second. I don't know if I zoned out or if maybe I just didn't follow along. Is the character's homeless, not the guy? Or is the guy homeless?
Yeah, the character's homeless. Yeah.
So in 20 years, you're going to be homeless? Is that what you said?
No, I
said he's
not.
You in 20 years, so.
No, I don't think I'll be homeless. The house is almost paid off, so okay. I don't think I'll be homeless.
All right, so then so that's the difference between you and him, I guess. But I guess that could happen to anybody.
Oh, absolutely. My gosh, especially today in these uncertain times. My gosh.
I'm sure someday I'll be homeless.
So I think a lot of people will be able to relate to my character witnessing this and saying, okay, where do I end up like this guy? Will I be this guy? What happens to me? It's the great unknown.
Yeah. So, it sounds like an interesting concept. I think you got some stuff going on there. I mean, if anyone says a movie is too funny, then I'm usually on board. I think dramas can be funny. You know, I think you can still have the impact of, you know, the important message that you're burying in the film without, you know, losing that because it's funny, you know, that you can pull mm-hmm. off both. So the other thing that I'm curious about too with independent filmmakers now is I see things like Netflix and Hulu as a huge opportunity for independent filmmakers because now they can actually have a distribution channel that's accessible to be able to get their film out there. I mean, yeah, I know a lot of people, you know, you still have to get Netflix or whatever. You have to pay certain fees and whatnot. But you're putting that film in front of, you know, so many people now with the ability to do that with streaming online. Is that something that you've thought about, or do you have any like opinion on that?
Well, absolutely. Whatever means it takes to grab some eyeballs, you know, my gosh, we become such this, a visual society, you know, we look, I mean, my God, well, what's a book? You know what I mean? Everything now is just the video, the downstreaming or downloading or whatever. I'm 50. I don't know what they call it. What is it? Downstream, not downstreaming.
Well, just streaming live? Video.
I don't know.
Yeah. Streaming video.
Well,
basically what it's doing.
I'm starting to sound like my character now because people are like, well, you know, you can stream that live or on demand. And I'm like, I don't know what on demand is. I don't know what it is.
It was funny because when I asked you to do this show, you're like, sure, I'll do it. What's a podcast?
A podcast is basically something that no one will ever hear. So
yes,
just to define that for
true,
you.
Jack, that is true.
But no, I think basically there was I'm sure you're kind of familiar with the revolution of what happened with music now, how basically the major labels have kind of gone aside because now you don't have to go to a record store and buy albums anymore. You can just log on to iTunes or, you know, there's a million other websites that you can go on to and just get MP3s or downloadable versions of music. So it's leveled the playing field for independent artists that don't have label support to be like, hey, here's my album. You know, you can get it. Here's where you can buy it. You know, whereas before you would have had a label and had a record deal and paid money to get the things printed and then have them, you know, mm-hmm. put in the stores, sell it to the store. You know, I feel like there's a revolution going on with film at the same way, because now you can actually get millions and millions of people, you know, potentially to watch your content by putting it on things like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu. I mean, yeah, you have to get them to click on it and watch it, but I feel like there's a lot more opportunity, but there's also a lot more competition as well, because if it's easier for one person to do it, it's easier for anybody to do it.
Oh, absolutely!
What did you use to shoot the film? Because I know a lot of people now are using handheld Canon 5Ds and DSLRs and stuff like that.
5D sounds familiar. I mean, I had a great camera operator in Scott Lehman. Scott's wonderful. We've done a lot of stuff together. People always ask, what are you using? I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know. It's my first time directing a film. I'm more of a stage guy. We captured, some great looks of the film. We shot one scene in this cobblestone alley. Well, of course, with the homeless man, his name is John J.J. Robinson. Even that name just sounds strong and concrete.
Isn't that Spider-Man's villain? Oh, no, wait,
I'm sorry.
That's J. Jonah Jameson I'm thinking of. Never mind.
Is that the guy from Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this guy isn't from Spider-Man.
Right.
I mean, an entirely different film. But yeah, just jumping back to where you said, you know, I don't. It's like something has to replace something else. And in my youth, my God, I would go to a mall and just live at the record store and just sift through all that vinyl and seeing what was new and. And you know, we still have those pockets of stores all across the country. Plan 9 here in Richmond, where you can still fan through albums. And so I guess you have to give something up in order. You know, well, I guess it's progress. Just capturing eyes to watch your stuff. There is a competition there. Everybody, even the amateurs, are just kind of jumping on it. And I mean, it's exciting, but like you said, it's very competitive at the same time. And I think the strong point would be in the writing. It's like, what kind of script do you have? I mean, you have to sift through all the garbage to get to the essence of the story. Are these characters you care about? And that's always been my focus. It's not just, hey, let's make a movie. Well, let's make a movie with a purpose. Let's make a movie with a strong message. And there is a message here. And perhaps a lot of guys that are on the cusp of turning 50 will latch onto this and think, yeah, there is life after 50, you know?
So there's no explosions or superheroes in this movie, I'm guessing, right?
There are not, I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
There's just great writing and great acting and like I said, wonderful professional actors who did this as a favor to me and just blessed with I got this dream cast. Everybody I had asked, well, with the exception of a few. There was one character named Myra who became Mike because I approached four actresses and they all turned me down or they were busy with something else. And then I said, well, gosh, I can't find a Myra. Okay, well, this is easy. Myra is now Mike.
Well, I thought that happened in the movie. I was going to say, that's a real turning 50 story.
yeah, 50. It's
sex changes.
Sex
change. It wouldn't be the first time it's happened, I'm sure.
Well, I haven't met a woman since the 80s, but that's another story.
I know. So what's the movie called again?
Party of 50.
All right, so so our listeners will be able to, you know, hopefully keep an eye out for it if you see it someplace.
Yes, but, yes. And there's, like I said, there's two trailers on YouTube that you can check out. One has this comedic angle, and the other one is very dramatic with no dialogue, just music.
Cool. All right, so yeah, we'll definitely throw up some links so people can get to those. And I don't know, Jack, what else have we learned? Not to get your collectibles autographed. Don't get into acting if you want to be famous or get laid.
That's true.
We're just killing dreams today. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm downtrodden. I'm gonna have a somber day.
Is there any place else that they can find info, Bill?
Yeah. There's my Party of 50 Facebook page. You can like that. And let's see, what else? My gosh. That's it, I think, for now.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, as long as they have someplace to go, they can find information. That's good.
Yes. Yes. Party of 50 on Facebook. Take a look. Some good stuff.
And then, of course, Jack, there's always the way that people can get a hold of us, which is
your feedback.
They can find us on Facebook, right? Oh, you want to do it?
Oh, you know, Bob Barker? I love this part. I love the plugs. I get to put on my announcer voice.
No, who was the announcer from Price is Right? That's what you just... Roddy? What the hell was his name?
Yeah, Rob
Roddy. Yeah, you sound like him. Go ahead.
All right. You can find Yakking Off with Jack and Tom on Facebook at www.facebook.com/YaoJT. We can also be followed on Twitter at Yakking Off. We have a WordPress available, which is yakkingoff.wordpress.com. What am I missing?
Emails.
You can email us if you want to talk to us or give us your show ideas. You want to be an interviewer because we're doing a bunch of those now. Whatever you may do, you can reach us at tom@yakkingoff.com. Or you can reach me at jack@yakkingoff.com. Or if you just want to tell us how bad we suck, you can send it to comments@yakkingoff.com.
Maybe I should make a yousuck@yakkingoff.com.
Yousuck@yakkingoff.com.
That'll be the negative.
Not this guest.
If you want to tell us about Bill, you can email comments@yakkingoff.com.
Yeah, definitely. And if anybody out there does have an idea for a podcast that is an original idea that they are willing to do work and actually put in effort and be professional, we are looking for people to join the Yakking Off Podcast Network. So you could be doing what we're doing now, which I'm sure seems just the most illustrious and romantic.
Pull your pants off.
Oh, I thought the video was off.
He's probably not wearing any. That's why the video's off.
Exactly. It's just me and my cat, naked. That's right.
The new avenue we're going down, folks, is if you don't have an iTunes account or don't have an iPod, iPhone, any Apple device, you may find us on your Android device at Stitcher.
Yeah, so
check out
Stitcher app. Search Yakking
Off.
Download
that app and listen to us on the go.
Right. Well, so from Jack and from me, we want to thank Bill for being with us today. And we hope that you guys enjoyed the episode, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.